So how many of you are dealing with compliance and archiving and e-discovery? Okay. Using archiving from third parties? Just one? Okay. Using Exchange archiving? Oh, that's percentage-wise a very good number.
Yeah.
Still have a minute to go.
Yeah.
Cool. So since this is a small group, we'll just make it a little more informal. What are you looking for in this discussion? Hybrid. Okay. I'm
hybrid.
sorry?
Also hybrid.
Also hybrid. That's great.
Online.
Online? Online only?
Yes.
Okay. So both primary mailbox and archive in the cloud. Okay. Anybody
Anyone?
else? Hybrid and online too? On premises? Okay. We'll touch some of the things. It's very, very similar, but we'll also show you the advantages of archiving in the cloud and how to do it. Okay. So let's get started. That's good to know. So session objectives, we're going to cover an overview of Exchange Online Archiving, also EOA. How to set it up and deploy, we'll get an overview of that. We'll understand how the management experience works with online archiving and then discuss how each of the compliance features are affected or are, not affected. They're pretty seamless experience. We'll take a look at that. So for those who don't know me, my name is Bharat Suneja. I'm in the Exchange IT Pro team at Microsoft. And
My name is Deepak. I'm a program manager in the engineering team of archiving and compliance. How many of you attended my session earlier this week? Okay. Oh, okay. Good number.
Yeah,
awesome.
You're good. So Deepak is the PM for the archiving feature. I do the technical writing. So all the great documentation that you see out there, you can thank me for it. All the things that you like and don't like about the feature, you can,
Only the like, not the don't
Only the
like.
likes. You don't want the dislikes. The man doesn't want dislikes. Okay. So let's get started. Why archive? So one of the big reasons is, of course, storage management. Mailboxes keep on growing larger, larger, larger. People don't want to delete their email. We are also required by a lot of regulations in different countries and in different industries to hold on to our email for X amount of time or have policies within our organization that say we will hold email for that amount of time. So that's one of the reasons people have been archiving. Then there is this concept called immutability, is once I have something in the archive or I'm retaining email for X number of years, I need to make sure, especially for legal reasons, when you have e-discovery requests, that this concept called immutability means the email is not deleted before that time, and it is not tampered with before that time. So nobody tries to change it, whether it's the user, whether it does it maliciously with intent or not knowing, or whether it's some kind of an automated process that either deletes email or does anything else to it. We need to make sure that we maintain that email in its original form or any of its versions. Data governance, we're talking about email lifecycle. So in your organization, either you already have or you may have in the future decide to say how long an email will last, where it'll be stored, and when it'll be removed from the mailbox. And finally, why are we doing all this? Well, for most organizations that do it for legal and regulatory reasons, do it for e-discovery. There's also legitimate business requirements. HR wants to conduct an investigation. They want somebody's mail. They want to search, you know, what was sent in and out, and that's where eDiscovery also helps you. So let's take a deeper look at some of the reasons. We talked about storage management. Again, ballooning mailbox sizes. When we moved to consumer email experiences and got used to this unlimited mailbox sizes, back in the days, mailboxes used to be controlled by quotas. They still are in a lot of organizations. And the quotas have grown because now users expect you to provision larger and larger mailboxes. We're not talking megabytes. We're not talking gigabytes, 1 or 2 gigabytes. It's much more than that. And this concept of unlimited storage. The other risk is when we imposed quotas on users, what do? They move items to PST files. Now, these PST files are on users' home computers or laptops. They're out there. And doing an e-discovery on these PSTs, which you do not control, not only challenging, not impossible, but can get very, very expensive and can be a manual process, can require a lot of third-party tools to search PSTs and suck them up and so on. Data retention, again, industry regulations. If you're in financial industry or insurance, or if you're a public company, then the stock exchange have certain requirements and so on. So retaining email for X number of years is another big requirement. And finally, discovery. When you get an e-discovery request, Deepak had a slide, how long it took us previously to do e-discovery on just Exchange email and then other data sources out there, because you're not just restricted to email, right? So the cost of doing that e-discovery is very high if you do not control your data. If there is PSTs out there that you have to go and search after you get an e-discovery request, it's going to take a lot longer, be a lot more expensive. You may have fines imposed. He had some good figures on his slide. You can take a look at that. And they're not low fines by any means. So rather than go through all that after the fact, it makes sense to plan for it. It makes sense to understand where your data resides and bring it back or have some kind of control over it. So these are some of the reasons we archive. Now, what did we do before we had archiving? We used journaling, right? What does journaling do? You're basically taking each message, and the journaling agent that runs on a hub transport server makes a copy of the message, adds the metadata. So it has the original message as an attachment, and it has the message metadata, which includes message ID, when it was sent, who sent it, who received it, if it was sent to a distribution group. There's the expanded distribution group members listed in that message. Okay? So now I have a track of things. So that's what we did before, and we took this email and either put it in a journaling mailbox, which again keeps on growing because you can send and receive a lot of email, or a lot of people put it in a third-party archiving system, or now also third-party archiving services in the cloud. But again, you're duplicating the data, taking it from Exchange, making a copy out of it, putting it in another system or a service. So that's what we did before we had what we call in-place archiving. The other thing, of course, with journaling is items that do not go through the transport are not captured. So things like notes, things like you know, all this stuff that does not go through the transport. What else is it besides notes? There is tasks. Okay, appointments. So when you do not send a meeting request, just create an appointment for yourself. Add an attachment to it or whatever. All those things are not captured by journaling because journaling works as a transport agent. So what we have now after journaling is, before we even get to archiving, Deepak showed a slide, and this is what we have in Outlook 2013. What is known as the slider or offline settings. Now, what this allows you to do is basically say what is the duration of messages that you want to keep offline in Outlook. So instead of downloading the whole mailbox, you can set it to 6 months, 12 months, and so on. Allows you to have very large mailboxes but only a small portion of that resides on the client computer, single mailbox. Deepak here said you do not need archiving, because in Outlook 2013, you have this slider, you can control that. So what this does is it solves one problem. It makes your OST smaller, certainly, okay? But here are some of the reasons why you do need archiving and you should consider archiving. The experience, of course, here is when you search, it's going to search on the server in the same mailbox. It's still going to bring you the mail as long as you're online. So no archiving. The reason you do need archiving, smaller mailbox, okay? Tiered storage is one of the big benefits. So when we launched archiving in Exchange 2010, you could keep the archive mailbox on the same mailbox database as the user's primary mailbox. Okay, so no tiered storage. SP1 in 2010, we introduced this capability to have the archive located anywhere. Now that allows you to provision cheaper storage, tiered storage, maybe less number of DAGs, so you need more high availability on the primary mailbox, and you can have maybe a little bit more relaxed high availability on the archives. The other thing to consider is, of course, archiving is old email. The default archiving policy, 2 years, you can have maybe whatever you want, 3 years, 1 year, right? It's email that people are not accessing frequently. That's what you're going to push to the archive. And users typically don't go back and look for that email or access that email. They may conduct a search, and some of that email from the archive is going to show up in the search. That's one of the common modes of accessing the archive. And the other benefit, of course, is the ability to archive in the cloud. We'll take a look at why that is such a wonderful thing and the benefits that it brings. But big thing is almost no storage. Right? Now you're just worrying about your primary mailbox storage when you archive in the cloud. So with in-place archiving, you're archiving everything in place. You're simply moving data to the archive mailbox, which is like just another mailbox. Now, when we didn't have archiving and users had a PST, it looked pretty much similar in Outlook, right? It would show up as another store, another mailbox. A PST file. Now consider that that PST has gone online in the archive mailbox. Okay? Not only is the user seamlessly able to access the primary and the second archive mailboxes and search across both of them, okay? But you also have the benefit of having the archive in the Outlook web app, right? So if you're using PSTs, if the user is using PSTs, not accessible in Outlook web app, if you're generally using third-party archiving systems, a lot of them will not show you archives in the Outlook web app. So that is one huge benefit as well. Is this working? Yes. Okay. When email is moved to the archive automatically using archive policy, it creates the same folder hierarchy in the archive mailbox. So if an email has resided in a particular folder in the primary mailbox, move it to the archive. If the folder does not exist in the archive, it gets created and the mail gets moved to that folder. Seamless experience, users will always know. If this folder doesn't have it, the same folder in the archive will have that email. Search is something that we've enhanced in 2013. So now it works across Outlook and Outlook web app. When you create a search, you can search the primary and the archive mailbox. And the search results that are brought back, you see single threads which contain mail from the primary and the archive. So from the user's perspective, this is very, very simple, very, very seamless, unlike a lot of third-party tools, which may require installation of Outlook plugins. Archives may not be available in Outlook web app. And your primary mailbox is getting a lot of stubs with messages pointing to the archive. So we're not looking at any of that. We're looking at a much more simpler experience here for the user. Combined conversation view. Okay, what does the admin experience looks like? So we already said this is a second mailbox for the user. So each user can have one primary mailbox and one archive. Okay? No more. And what that means is the admin experience is going to be very, very simple because it's just another mailbox. Okay? It shares the same Active Directory user object. Also, when you're planning high availability, when you're planning mailbox server storage and so on, all the considerations remain the same. Again, no complexity, simpler deployment. Okay? You also use the same tools to manage your primary mailbox and the archive. In Exchange 2013, it is the new web-based console, the EAC, Exchange Admin Center. You can also manage it using the shell, Exchange Management Shell. In Exchange 2010, you can use EMC, the Exchange Management Console, and you can also still use the shell. So you don't have new tools to learn. You know, there's just another archiving system, and now I'm learning the tools of how to manage that archive. Much simpler admin experience. The topologies in which you can deploy the archive. Of course, there is on-premises, which has been around since 2010. You can be in the cloud only, so the user's primary mailbox, as well as the archive reside in the cloud in Exchange Online. You can do a hybrid, where some users are on-premises only with both their primary and archive, and some users are in the cloud. Exchange Online Archiving offers you a cloud-based archive for your on-premises users. So now the primary mailbox is on-premises, but you've shipped all the old data to the archive. And generally, the old data is a lot more than your primary mailbox. If you're looking at what users collect, maybe 3.5 to 5 gigs, your mileage is going to vary. Maybe 10 gigs a year is probably too much, but more in the 5 gig range per year. If you look at 7 years of email, out of which maybe 5 years of email resides in the cloud, we're talking about 25 gigs in the cloud. Maybe a 10 gig mailbox on premises. So we're talking a lot of storage now gone to the cloud. Huge benefits there. Per user setting, so you can, it's not like you can, you don't have to do it for all the users at the same time. You can try it out with a couple of users, see how it works for you, and scale that deployment. And then if you're happy, you can have all the users archiving to the cloud. Another benefit is unlimited storage, okay? And that is huge. If you're looking at storage costs, I was talking to a lot of people in the conference about what storage costs you, and a lot of people are still deploying Exchange on expensive SANs and NAS storage, right? This can quickly add up to very large numbers. So you're saving a lot of money here in storage. Seamless compliance, so all the compliance features that you use on premises, for instance, retention policies, you know, move and delete email, preservation using hold, e-discovery, auditing, all that remains the same. So all of that is going to work on premises and in the cloud. Management, we talked about, it's from on-premises tools, EAC and the shell, and you do require hybrid configuration. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. So licensing Exchange Online Archiving, there are two ways to get it. One is Exchange Online Archiving by itself, which is in the US, $3 per user per month for unlimited storage. Now that's like less than price of a cup of coffee, right? So huge benefit there. You can also get it as Enterprise Cal with services. So that's a new CAL that's available, and if you get that, you get EOA as part of that. aka.ms/getEOA is the URL, so if you want to sign up for Exchange Online Archiving. And it almost looks like I'm selling it here, but... Now, configuration for EOA. The mailboxes on-premises need to be at least Exchange 2010 SP2 or higher. It can be 2013 also. It requires hybrid configuration. So there was another session, I don't know if you attended it, OUCB311 by Ben Appleby, excellent session on hybrid configuration, where he actually shows you all that it takes. You can also have, you know, since now you're going to be connecting to the new Office, the new Office 365 tenant, you're going to require a Exchange 2013 SP3 at least to connect to the cloud. Any questions so far?
How many of you here are actually, do you have an Office 365 tenant? And you're planning to use it for hybrid archiving. So you already have the hybrid set up?
I'm about to set it up next week.
Sorry?
I'm about to set it up next week.
Oh, you are? Okay. How about you? You got the... Okay. And you as well? Oh, so you already have the hybrid set up? Oh, okay. The rest of you, you have?
Starting a pilot, Office 365.
Okay.
Okay. And you said you were purely cloud, so you have all your...
I'm really on-prem.
Oh, you're purely on-prem, and you're looking to move to the cloud?
No.
Hybrid. Perfect. Okay.
Okay.
So in the cloud, we are going to be all Wave 15 from now on. So if you have 2010 on-prem, for example, you need to have SP3 because that's what all our mailboxes in the cloud are going to be. Yep.
Okay. So what are the requirements and how this is going to look like? You have on the left your on-premises exchange organization. Right side is the cloud. First of all, of course, your Exchange 2010 or 2013 mailbox servers and client access servers. Then you need what we call a hybrid server or an Office 365 Active Directory synchronization, DirSync. So that synchronizes your on-premises Active Directory, but only the attributes that are required to work with the cloud are synchronized with Exchange Online or Office 365. So when you manage users from your on-premises, this is the part that goes and synchronizes it to the cloud. Then there is Active Directory Federation services, which we said is not really required, it's optional, but it helps your users have a seamless login experience so they are authenticating against your on-premises Active Directory and they're able to access the cloud-based archive. So single sign-on experience. The client access server, of course, performs Outlook web app proxying. We'll take a look at how that works. The e-discovery, MRM, and MTA, that is all done by, what's it called, the proxy?
MRS proxy.
The move mailboxing?
Move mailbox is MRS proxy.
MRS proxy, okay. So that's the word. MRS proxy basically helps you move messages, you know, when the archiving policy is implemented, or helps you move mailboxes from your on-prem to the cloud. And if you don't like it, you can even move it back to on-premises. So excellent experience there. How do you deploy it? There is an easy-to-use tool called the Exchange Deployment Assistant, or EDA. The URL is down there, aka.ms/xdeploy. And what that allows you to do is you go in, you click on hybrid, and you answer a few questions, like what is your existing infrastructure, whether it's 2010 or 2013, and where do you want to go? And it'll give you step-by-step checklist of things to do to be able to move to the cloud or set up a hybrid organization. Let's take a look at some of the steps that you will go through. First of all, of course, you'll register your domains in the Office 365 portal. So any number of domains that you have that are used for email addresses, you're going to go and register within Office 365. You'll be asked to prove that you own them, and you set up a DNS entry that says this domain is yours, and that's what we check. You configure ADFS, then you configure DirSync, including the ability for Exchange Online to write back a couple of attributes within your Active Directory. And we'll take a look at how that's done. There is one prereq, the KB is listed there, so you need to have that installed as well. Mailbox servers, if you're not on SP2 yet, so you need to upgrade to SP2 or SP3 is out as well. So that's the minimum. Publish your auto discover record, because that is how clients from outside are going to be able to connect to your infrastructure, and that's how Exchange Online also does. Then you go and run the hybrid wizard, which is much easier from Exchange 2010 SP2 onwards, right? It reduces a number of steps that you took before SP2 to automate the whole process. So less scope of making any mistakes during the configuration process. In 2013, it's made even easier. I think it's single click, and a lot of things get set up automatically. Once you're done with the hybrid wizard, one extra step, if you are on Exchange 2013, is to set up what is called OAuth authentication between your Exchange 2013 servers and the cloud. You only need to do it once, but that allows cross-premises e-discovery to work. So if you have 2010, you do not need to perform the last step of OAuth. Okay, we don't use OAuth for e-discovery cross-premises. But for 2013, you'll need to do that. And we're trying to simplify that, how authentication works. So going forward, if even in on-premises, you use Exchange and SharePoint and Link, and you want to integrate them, you're going to set up OAuth. So the process should be familiar. And we'll talk a little bit about how that is going to work. So I have this command on the screen because it's not documented yet. And what you're basically doing is setting up a new auth server, defining the cloud as a auth server. Then you're basically getting the certificate in your on-premises. And on the next screen, you take that certificate that you just exported from your on-prem and connecting to Exchange Online and giving it that certificate or importing that certificate. So that's how we set up secure authentication using OAuth between your Exchange 2013 on-prem and Exchange Online. Again, this is required for e-discovery. If you're not going to use e-discovery, the setup will still work without doing this, but there's really no reason not to do this. So once you're done with this setup, how can you provision archive? It's very, very simple. In Exchange 2013, in the web-based console, you're just going to go to the user account, and there's a single click that says, create an archive. And once you do that, you can basically, it's going to pop up here. There is a screenshot. So this is what it looked like in EMC in 2010. And you had to specify your tenant organization domain here. Now, in Exchange 2013, in EAC, you don't have to do that anymore. Instead of creating an on-premises archive, you're just going to select cloud-based archive, and that's all. Click OK. Now, behind the scenes, this kicks off a process. It takes some time because your on-premises is going to communicate to the cloud and get that archive created in the cloud. So let's take a look at how that is going to work.
Okay. Hey, before I do the demo, I just want to quickly understand, since we have very few people here, why do you want to archive in the cloud? Is it because of quota? Is it because of compliance? I'm just trying to understand, you know, the demand that we have in the field today. Feel free to just let me know. Do you have quota management? Everyone here, actually. Compliance and e-discovery. But why specifically in the cloud, though? Just cost. Okay. Storage costs on-prem. Okay. What is your typical mailbox size that you need to move stuff into?
Average is around 2.5 gigs.
Per user? Okay. Okay, great. Okay.
Or larger? Anybody larger than 30 gigs?
Some mailboxes.
Okay. What are we talking about, 40, 50, 100? One mailbox, 100 gigs, okay. Anybody else with super large mailboxes? 50 gigs or higher?
So the crucial thing I want to take away is you care more about the quota than the end user experience. Is that what you're saying? Or it's a bonus to get the end user experience. Is that right? Yeah? Okay. All right.
So let's take a look at...
All right, so in here I have two tenants. So what I have here is my on-prem tenant. I don't know if you can see, do I need to make it bigger or can everyone see it fine? Yeah? All right, so this is my on-premises tenant. I have Exchange 2013 running over here. And I also have my cloud tenant. If you can see, this is pod 51048. So this is my cloud tenant. So for when I have hybrid setup, for every user or mailbox that I create on-premises, when DirSync runs, it goes and creates what is called a mail-enabled user in the cloud. So for all mail-enabled users, you can attach the archive mailbox. So if you're going to go look for that particular archive mailbox in the cloud, you need to use get mail user and look at its archive details, right? And as Bharat mentioned before, the default value that we give for archive mailbox when you create it in the cloud for the first time is 100 GB, but it's unlimited. You can make it as much as you want. That's what we are promising you. The other cool thing that we haven't really talked about before is if you have users in your organization who have left the organization, but you are required by law to keep their data, and that data could be costing you a lot of money, we have an E15 in the cloud, what we call as inactive users, and it's free, which means you can put all your inactive users' data in the cloud for free. So that's a huge cost saving for you guys. All right.
But let me do point out that the inactive users are for cloud only. So your primary and the archive needs to reside in the cloud for that user.
Yep.
And once you have that, you know, you can turn these users into inactive once they leave the organization.
Yeah. All right. So as Bharat mentioned before, the first thing you need to do is create a user. So I'm going to do it from the beginning. I'm going to go create a user mailbox over here. Pick a city in Spain. So I'm going to call it Sevilla. Call it a new user. Give it a name. Right. And Sevilla... at exfutures.com. All right. Got to give the password. Sorry. All right. So that should create the new user. Now, if I go and run DirSync on this, so let me open up my DirSync machine. So all I need to do is start online coexistence. When I do that, typically what this does is it tells the cloud tenant that there is a mailbox on-prem and you need to create a corresponding mail user in the cloud for this person. So if I go back to my cloud tenant and I do get mail user Sevilla, give me 1 second.
So this shell session is connected to Exchange Online. So whatever he's doing in this session is...
So right now it hasn't found it yet. So it's usually DirSync takes a little bit of time. So I'm going to take one of the users and I'll show you, I'll get back to Sevilla and this thing. But I'm going to show you one of the users that I created on-prem. Right, go back here. And so I've got Madrid as a user that I created this morning. What I'm going to do is go here and create an archive for this person. Now, it's really simple. All I need to do, as Bharat showed you, is, you know, go here, click Enable Archive, and I get two options. The first option, yes, it's useful if you want to keep your archives on-prem itself, but that's not what you guys are here for. So I'm going to go hit the cloud-based archive for this particular user. So if I... You know that the person I'm going to try to create this for is Madrid, right? So if I go back here and I'll show you what Madrid looks like. So I have the mail user, and if I look at his archive, you see that there's been nothing created. So the archive status is none, which means there is no archive for this particular user. All right, go back here and say OK. And that's it. It's as simple as that. Now, technically, on premises, we know that we have provisioned an archive for this person. So if I go into my on-prem Exchange installation PowerShell and do get mailbox of Madrid, it tells me that I have an archive created. The GUID that you see means that something has been created, but it is hosted pending. So the status is none. It's hosted pending, meaning, you know, it's waiting for the cloud to get the archive to be provisioned. So two things happen here. When I do this, the first thing is this command tells the cloud that for the mail user Madrid, go and create an archive. The cloud goes and creates the archive mailbox and writes back into the on-prem tenant. So you need to enable both. You need to enable forward sync in order to go from on-prem to the cloud, and then do the write back from cloud back into on-prem.
And it's only writing the attributes that are required to be written. So if you want, you can restrict permissions per attribute in Active Directory and lock it down that way if you'd really like.
All right. So I've typically, when you do this in your on-prem installation, DirSync is scheduled to run every 3 hours. But right now, I'm trying to force DirSync to run, so I'm forcing it to say, you know, start online coexistence sync. I'll try my luck, but usually it takes a few more minutes, so that's why I, you know, Bharat can continue doing what he's doing. Well, let's see what's going on over here. No, it's still waiting. Oh, there you go. Awesome. Yep. So the cloud now knows that the archive, that for the mail user, it needs to create an archive. So it's gotten the same GUID. If you see, it's 7F39 over here.
And
if I go
status.
Back to my on-prem, you see that it's the same GUID. So the on-prem has successfully talked to the cloud, and it's created the archive. Now, the next thing that needs to happen is for, you know, the cloud to tell on-prem that this has been created. Now, when I was setting this up, actually, we had a different demo box, and just my luck, somebody in Microsoft recycled the VM that I was doing this morning. So, well, I had to create a brand new tenant. So what I can show you, though, is how to do DirSync. So let's see. I've got my DirSync box. I go into my DirSync configuration. I hit next. And then here I'm supposed to enter my username and password for the cloud tenant. Since I have the password on my screen, I cannot show you, so I'm going to hide it for a bit. Give me 1 second. I don't remember it because it's a brand new tenant.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and
go ahead. We
can switch back.
Yep.
Yes. So even in 2010, I think it was SP2 probably, where we enabled delegate access for archive as well. But you're going to allow full mailbox access permissions. So there is no archive, only delegation. When you delegate the mailbox, the whole mailbox, by assigning full mailbox access, the other user will be able to use Outlook to get. Now, in 2013, it's a similar experience. And you can see the archive in Outlook Web Access as well.
Okay, yeah, but giving full mailbox access is not feasible
option. Yes, so for cloud-based archive and actually even on-premises, that is the. In fact, I think we do not even support delegate access for cloud-based archive. It's on-premises only.
All right.
So that's something to keep in mind if you have a lot of delegate scenarios.
Give me one sec, Bharat. So
sure.
Here I am. I've entered all my stuff. So I'm going to say enable hybrid deployment. I hit next. So it goes ahead and configures hybrid deployment. Wait for that to happen. Shouldn't take too long.
So this is the DirSync setup.
Yep. I hit next. And I say synchronize my directories now. Hit finish. Say OK.
And that's it.
All good. So, now I'm perfectly configured for the cloud to write back into my on-prem tenant. So what does that mean here? Let's go check it out. Still waiting. So I think this one usually takes like 3 or 4 minutes, so I'll wait for Bharat to go.
So while we wait for DirSync to write back, we'll go and take a look at how it exactly works. And he's already talked about it, so we'll be a little quick. You go ahead and create on your on-premises server, you create a cloud-based archive. What it's going to basically do is write that information to Active Directory on-premises, which in turn gets picked up by the DirSync server, which you just saw he set up. It was very, very easy to do. It writes a forward sync into the cloud using directory synchronization server in the cloud, which writes to the Active Directory in the cloud, and a cloud-based archive gets created in the cloud. Okay. Once that is run, the write-back occurs where the directory sync from the cloud wants to write back to DirSync on your on-premises, which makes that change into your Active Directory. After this happens, users are able to access your cloud-based archive. Now, as Deepak mentioned, it takes about 2 hours, or is it 3 hours? 3 hours
maximum
by
six.
Default, yeah. For this to occur. Maximum could be 6 hours. So if you want this to happen quickly, you need to go and run that command that he just showed, start online DirSync. And that kicks in the process manually, and things will happen within minutes rather than hours. Yes. That's why I said maximum of 6 hours. So you have a manual way to do it, you know, if you really want it to happen quicker. Okay, so that's how the provisioning process works. And your Exchange server now knows that the user has a cloud-based archive. Some extra animation that we didn't really need in there. Managing the archive. Now, all the things that you do with your primary mailboxes are the same things you can do with your archive mailboxes. Things like, you know, new mailbox, new archive, right? Enable archive for the existing user, okay? Move an on-premises archive to the cloud. Move a cloud-based archive back to on-premises if you would like. We hope you don't do that, but you have the option if you want. Disable the archive. Now, when you disable the archive, it's going to stay in the cloud for 30 days, and after that, we will purge it. So you have that window of 30 days to get any data back or reconnect the archive back to the same user. Okay? So pretty much everything that you do is very similar to your primary mailboxes on-premises. And you're all using on-premises tools to manage this. So there's really no touching the cloud at all as far as management goes. Properties that he just showed you on that commandlet screen when he said get mailbox, format list, star, archive, star, is the archive database. Actually, it's still used for EOA, so ignore the later part. The archive domain, which is your cloud-based tenant domain, so that'll show up as a property. The archive GUID and the archive status, which when you start out, it is nothing. Then while it's waiting for the DirSync process to occur, it says cloud pending or hosted pending. And then after it finishes, which I think it should be by now, it's going to stay cloud-based archive has been provisioned. Okay, so he's already given you a demo of how to manage that. Let's take a look at.
All right. Switch it back. So as you can see here, it says hosted provision now. So it's I haven't gotten the other one yet, but this was another one that I was trying just now. I've gotten Spain as my mailbox, and once it knows that the archive got provisioned there, it's gotten back, written back, and said, hosted provision. the mailbox is now active. Now, what does this mean for the end user? I've got to log back out and log back in. Give me 1 second. So this is ping.
So this relies on auto-discover. So within the same session, auto-discover is not going to refresh. You need to log back the user, and once they log back in, they will see the archive.
So there you go.
There you go.
Simple as that. They'll just see what's called the in-place archive. It won't look any different from what you see in, you know, when you create an on-prem archive. Now, how do you move items to the in-place archive? So to manage that, what you usually do is manage your retention policies. And for the people who attended my earlier session, what you need to do is go into compliance management, go into retention tags, and then create what is called a simple move to archive tag, right? The way you do that is go here and say apply to the entire mailbox, give it a TechEd move to archive. I will say this is the action, and when the item reaches, let's say, 1 day, and I hit save.
So all mail gets moved to the archive.
Yeah. So now I've got my policies. So let's see what policies I have. So I've got this default archive and retention policy. So let's see what that has. So it's got all these delete actions, and then it's got the 2-year move to archive action, right? It's got a 2-year, a 14-day. So all of these are the move to archive actions. What I'm going to do is go and add the new tag that I created, which is the TechEd tag. Let's see if that's there. There it is. So I'll add that, hit OK, and I'm going to save this.
It already has a default tag.
Oh, I see. OK. So the first thing I need to do is remove the existing default tag. Let's see.
Which is probably 730 days.
Yeah, I'll remove
that. So that's 2 years.
And go and add the other one.
So he just changed the archive policy from moving in 2 years to moving in 1 day, just for the demo.
Yep. All right. So now I have the policy. So now for you guys, the way you would use this is typically, you know, you said you had users with more than 2.5 GB of data. But how many years ago was this data? Do you know? Do you have a rough age?
15 years. 15?
Yeah.
You need to consider is what is the time period for which users really access data?
Correct.
And the default policy that we have created, that setup creates for you, is 2 years. You can go and modify that, or you can just create your own tag, as Deepak showed you, and give it whatever value you want.
Yep. So once you do that, all you need to do is go into this particular user and go into mailbox features and just add the right retention policy. So now I'm going to go here and say apply the default archive and retention policy, hit save, and that's it. When you're ready, so usually the manage folder assistant runs, it picks the time, it runs every day. What I can do, though, is go and force this to run on this particular user by saying start manage folder assistant and specify the name of the user. And that's it, as simple as that. Now, what's this going to do is it is going to move all the items that are older than the age that I specified automatically into the archive mailbox. So this way, you can control the amount of space that you keep on-prem. And for the rest of the older email, they will be in the cloud. As simple as that.
So we'll talk a little bit more about the policies. But if you go back and show the two policies that you have.
Yep.
So if you were on Exchange 2010, when you went to your retention policies, we created the default archive and retention policy. So this is what you have in Exchange 2010. If you start with Exchange 2013 or upgrade your existing infrastructure to 2013, the new policy is called default MRM policy. They have the same tags, except different names, so you can identify that this is created by a different version. When you archive enable a mailbox, the default policy automatically gets applied to that user if they do not already have a policy. So before you created that archive, if you already assign a policy for retention to that user, then this doesn't occur, but no policy will apply this one.
The other thing that the users themselves can do is if they know that they've got items that are older, they don't want the policy, but the policy only goes up to 2 years, they can move their really big items for, you know, just drag and drop it using Outlook or OWA. Really simple and straightforward. And it just goes and puts it in the archive mailbox. The other thing that we haven't mentioned till now is the dumpster, both in the primary and archive.
In a little bit.
What do you want me to show the migration thing?
Yes,
sure.
That's exactly what
okay. Awesome. So the other thing, the today you guys might have archives on-prem itself, right? What we also enable you to do is move that archive mailbox to the cloud without you having to create a new one there. Just take what you already have today and just move it directly to the cloud. And we enable enable that migration. Let me show you how. The way it's done is you actually go into your ECP in the cloud. So you go into your migration, and all you need to do is create a new migration to Exchange Online. So I'm going to do a remote move migration. I'll hit next. And then the user is where you go and pick which user you want to move the archive to. So at this point of time, I think I created an on-prem archive for Nathan. Let me actually go take a look, because I don't remember. Give me 1 second. So go into my mailboxes. Oh, this is on-prem. Hold on.
Yeah, you need to go to on-prem.
So I've go into my recipients. I've got Edward on-prem. Let's see what he has. Oh, he's got a cloud-based archive too. Barcelona. Everybody's got a cloud-based archive. Anyway, if you did, let me show you what it would look like. I'll just pick one of them at random. So migrate to Exchange Online, remote. I'll pick Barcelona. Hit OK. And hit next. So over here, if you see, this will automatically pick the MRS proxy. This is for migration, so it knows exactly where to pick it up from on-prem. It's going to contact the proxy, find out that it exists, and right here, you have this option. Simple as that. Move the archive mailbox only without moving the primary mailbox. So all your mission-critical data, you can still keep it on-prem, but if you had imported, let's say, PSTs into the archive mailbox when you were creating it on-prem, you can just migrate it directly over here. Easy as that.
Yep. So all in an easy-to-use web-based UI, so all works very seamlessly, and you can see how easy this is to manage. So let's move forward. How does access work from the client side? And I think we're running a little bit longer on the demo, so what I've already shown you, I'm not going to cover again. We'll just rush past those slides. Okay, so here's your Outlook access. How does the Outlook client see the cloud-based archive? So when you start up Outlook, it uses AutoDiscover. It goes to the where AutoDiscover points, which is your client access server on-premises. The client access server tells it, hey, you have a primary mailbox on-premises, and you have a cloud-based archive. And then Outlook, once it gets that information, can directly connect to the cloud to get the archive. So primary from the on-premises, cloud in the archive for Outlook. Now, next, we'll take a look at how, what is the information that AutoDiscover provides. And what's highlighted in there is alternative mailbox, and it basically says where it resides. In this case, it is the service dog food in our, you know, this is the, before we went live. But this is what you're going to see. Now, if Outlook cannot connect, you can simply check this information. The steps are listed here. Click on the Outlook tray icon, and you can look at the AutoDiscover XML response your client access server provided to the Outlook client. And if you do not see that cloud address in your alternative mailbox, you know that something is wrong. Now, Outlook web app, how does that work? It goes again, does the same thing, connects using a browser to your client access server. Now, unlike Outlook, the client access server does not say, hey, your archive reside is there. It actually knows that the archive reside is there and goes and gets the data from the cloud, and it renders it in the client's browser. Okay? So what is happening in this case, basically, is primary from here, and the archive is proxied by your client access server. So two different ways of accessing and different traffic flow. Now, how do you get data to the archive? We talked about archiving policy. You already saw a demo. Any questions, feel free. Okay. You can also use this tool called PST Capture, which basically allows you to go out and search for PST files, because that's one of the problems we want to address with archiving, is capture PST data. Kill those PSTs, right? And make e-discovery easier, and let your org have more control on the user data. So this tool here, it's a free tool. The URL is up there. We just released version 2. And you can use this to look for PST files, grab them, bring them to a server on a file share. And then from there, you can push it to your mailbox. Now, if you have Exchange Online archiving set up, you cannot right now push it directly to the cloud-based archive. You have to push it to the primary mailbox or an on-premises archive. And from there, the managed folder assistant will take it up and say, hey, this is old email. I need to move it to the cloud. So that's how you get data to the cloud. So any questions about what we've discussed so far? OK, this is all looking good. This is all looking very cool. Yes?
What if you need to have disable an archive? Is there an easy way to move the data back to the mailbox? Or is it like in the past you have to export the data in PST files?
Good question. Excellent question. So what happens if the user is leaving? There's two things. You can move that archive back to on-premises. Once you do that, you can, you know, do whatever with it that you want. Now, there is no automated way to, like, you know, when you move individual messages to the archive using an archive policy, there is no reverse from that. You cannot suck it all back, you know. So you
but
bring back the archive.
I'm curious as to why you want to do that. Yeah.
The enterprise features, but only a part of the client has enterprise office licenses or Office Pro.
Okay.
So they can't access their archives from Outlook.
Okay.
And yeah, that's why I tried to disable the archive.
Oh, I see. Well, if your primary and archive are in the cloud, if you're running it with Office 365, we might be able to help. You can send me that question, and I can tell you ways to do that. There are ways to do it, but we haven't published them yet. But please do send me that question. But again, that applies only if you are in Office 365 completely.
Which means both primary and archive in the cloud.
Yeah.
Are you talking about inactive mailboxes?
No, this is I can
something
use.
Else. Okay.
Yeah, I can use something
okay.
else.
Yes.
If I'm in the cloud only, and the mailbox and the archive.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So we just published a blog post and documentation about inactive mailboxes. So if both the primary and the archive reside in the cloud, we allow you now to use this, provided that user at some point was in the cloud as an active user. Okay, turn it into an inactive user, and then you can take away that license and reassign it to somebody else.
Yeah. So the way you would do it is you place that mailbox on hold. Once you place the mailbox on legal hold, it can never be deleted. The mails will never be deleted. But even though you remove the user license, it is still discoverable because it's an Exchange mailbox, so e-discovery will continue to work. So you can still access it for all legal purposes, but you'll not be paying anything for it.
And
you delete the user from the Active Directory.
Correct.
Yeah.
And we have clear directions on how to actually do that without, you know, causing any orphaning of the mailbox, and so that you can get into the right SKU. So please do read about it before you go and delete the the user from AD.
So again, the name is inactive mailboxes.
Yeah.
I call it no-cost archiving.
Yeah.
Okay. Because that's what it already is, right? You're not paying anything after that, but you're still storing the data online, and you're able to do e-discovery on it. How cool is that? Yeah. So that's a lot of cost savings for you for old data for users who left. Yes.
Again, the details are in there. You might have to, you can reconnect, but you'll have to start paying again. That's the thing. So the way it works is if you delete the AD user, both the primary and archive, or you're talking about your...
So we're working
the
on details for reconnecting inactive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah. And the some of the initial details we recently published on the Exchange team blog. So if you look for inactive mailboxes, also I have URLs memorized. So aka.ms/inactive-mbx will get you to the documentation for inactive mailboxes.
You had a question.
Yes.
It's the reason we, it was by design, and the reason we built it.
Let me interject,
sure.
If you don't mind.
No.
So I'm going to rephrase that question. You can access archive in cached mode. What you want to know is, can I access it when I'm not online?
Exactly.
Okay, so you cannot access it because we're not synchronizing the archive to an OST file on your local. And that is one of the benefits, actually, is the fact that you don't have to synchronize this, you know, 20, 30, 40 gigs of very old email that does not get accessed very frequently. You don't want to bring it down the network every time you connect and then try to synchronize to it. So that's the overhead we're trying to remove and make it more efficient, smaller primary, old email in the cloud. When you're online, you can access it using both Outlook and OWA, but not offline.
Was there, again, a reason why you asked that question? I see. Yeah. Okay.
And that's one of the benefits of third-party products.
Okay. Okay.
Third-party products allow you to access it offline? Okay.
Well, for me, if I try to sell this whole Office 365 product suite, I try to sell also SharePoint, because for me, Exchange and the whole archiving team, it's not a storage solution, and a lot of employees use Exchange and their mailbox store data that is preferably stored maybe in a new mailbox type for Exchange 2013, which is also integrated into SharePoint.
Site mailboxes?
Yeah, because how
yes.
is this strategy?
So
on one side, we up the archive limit to 100 gigabytes, which shows me like, yeah, it's free, and you can keep continuing to use your archive mailbox to just put everything in mail where you might want to offload it to.
Absolutely.
So the reasons are twofold. You don't want to use Exchange for storing documents. That's not why we built the archive mailbox. The archive mailbox was built because people like him have 15 years of data, and that's what, you know, takes up a lot of space.
Mail data,
exactly.
Users, however, are going to continue adding attachments to email because that's a habit that we've created for a number of years now, right?
Yeah.
So in an ideal world, we would like you to store documents in SharePoint.
Yep.
We also have site mailboxes, which give you a unified view of your SharePoint data and your mailbox and, you know, common public folder type discussions all in one place. But it's going to take some time, right,
it's really hard
for users to.
Part of the solution because people are accustomed to work with the
exactly. Exactly. I totally understand that. And I mean, that's one of the reasons you need a lot of storage, and we give you unlimited storage.
Yes, Nitesh. What's your specific question about them? It's
it's not something we test. It's not something that we recommend even. And I'm not. I'm positive that you may not even be able to create archives for shared mailboxes.
Well, there's nothing preventing you from creating it today. That's the honest truth.
For shared mailboxes.
Yes.
Okay.
But we are honestly, we are still debating what we need to do. Personal archives are unlimited only for personal use, and I can make that very clear. For shared mailboxes, obviously it can be misused. I mean, 10 people can be putting in all their data. We don't want to misuse this feature. So although we haven't published it publicly, I don't think we will be up to 100 gigs, I think we'll be okay. But anything more than that, I don't think we'll be allowing it.
Also, if you look at the documentation and what is allowed in Office 365, one of the things that we, of course, do not want to see happening is you using journaling on-premises, having only one mailbox in the cloud, and dumping all your data in there because it's unlimited storage, right? So that would be
so we are clever. We are a little bit clever. We can identify people who are not doing it right, but please don't do it. It's just... maybe that we can take offline because it's not related to this topic, but we can take that offline. Yeah.
Okay.
You had a question? Yes.
Go ahead. Yes. So the default archive policy or the default MRM policy that gets created has a tag which is created at setup that moves your recoverable items to the cloud. So it's another mailbox, right? It also has its own recoverable items. We move your on-premise stuff. So all the stuff that you collect while you're on hold for a number of years, perhaps, fighting some legal case, you know, you don't want to delete that email, it gets moved to the cloud if it's in recoverable items. Let's take a look at compliance. We're now running a little bit short of time, so things that are already covered, I'm going to rush through. So you talked about hold. In Exchange 2010, we had litigation hold, which is now legacy, right? It allowed you to basically, it was a flag on the mailbox that said, hold everything. That's all, you know? What did that do? After you place that hold, user, if they delete, the user experience is prime here. So the user can still delete message, and it goes into deleted items. It deletes it from there. We'll take a look at how that workflow goes. But the message is not deleted ever. And any copies of the message that are created and the user modifies it, we store the original copy and any modifications that are made after that. So for e-discovery, you're always able to say, OK, this was the original message, and here are all the copies of the message. This is the message that the user tried to permanently delete, and we still retained it. But it was all or nothing. In Exchange 2010, we have in-place hold, which allows you to place three types of hold. One is an indefinite hold, which is kind of like litigation hold everything until I remove that hold. Okay? Next is a time-based hold, where you can say, hold this for 7 years or 6 years or whatever you want. Okay? Previously, you didn't have a way of doing this. Now you can be very definitive, and we'll take a look at how that works. Also, we have query-based hold. So it's the same hold, but you can do three different types of hold. The query-based hold, you can specify keywords, sender, recipient, and so on. And you can place only those items on hold. So the good thing is you're going to manage this hold against the on-premises mailbox using the on-premises tool. Once you create that hold, everything in on-premises, as well as the cloud-based archive, is going to be placed on hold. Very transparent. DirSync will synchronize that. And let's take a look at how this hold works. So item comes into the inbox first. Message is delivered. User deletes the message, goes into deleted items by default, or you can press shift delete. Once you do that, or empty the deleted items folder, it goes into the deletions folder in recoverable items. Now, recoverable items is another version of what we call dumpster in previous versions. We don't call that dumpster anymore. It's now a nice little name called recoverable items. Now, in the deletions folder, user can go in Outlook or Outlook Web App and say recover deleted items. Now, by default, the window is 14 days. Okay, within that window, they can still go and recover their deleted items which went out of their mailbox, right? But are still in deletions. They can also purge the item permanently by pressing delete from recover, okay? Once they do that, they think the message is gone, but it's not gone. If it's on hold, it's on hold. We will retain it. So here's what happens. We move it to the purges folder if it was on litigation hold, which is Exchange 2010. In Exchange 2013, we have a new subfolder called Discovery Holds. So we move the item to Discovery Hold. Now, the Manage Folder Assistant is going to go process this, look at your query for the in-place hold. Is it a time-based? Then I have to see if the time is expired. If it is a query-based hold, I have to see whether the message matches my query. And if it matches, I will retain it. Otherwise, I will get rid of that message permanently. So that's how this thing works. Another cool thing that happens is, of course, versions. So somebody edits the message. Okay, malicious, non-malicious, all debatable, but a message was edited. Now, for e-discovery, you need to be able to say, I have a track of all this. So we maintain versions in the versions folder. You do an e-discovery, and they're all going to show up. Finally, when you remove the hold, okay, the MFA is going to, what you see in 6C, and finally, when you remove the hold, this all is going to get cleaned up. So until you have this on hold, your recoverable items is going to grow. The default quota is about 30 gigs on premises. Okay? But if you have a cloud-based archive, we're already moving everything that is older than 14 days to the cloud. So instead of you storing it, it all moves to the cloud for one low price.
Bharat, one sec. So if you have a... So I just typed this in. So this is, you can't create a retention tag to move items from dumpster of primary to dumpster of archive through ECP. You will have to do it through the shell, and this is what you would have to use. So it's if you see the type is recoverable items, and then the retention action is a move to archive. And based on how much ever you want to move, because typically if you have a user on hold, then the dumpsters is what has majority of the data. So it's more beneficial for you to move it to the archive rather than keep it on-prem.
You say there's a quota on the dumpster.
Yeah, the recoverable items, not the dumpster.
Yeah.
The recoverable items.
If you reach the quota, how do you see it?
So if you reach the quota, then you will run into problems. We do not want you to reach the quota. You can raise the quota. You can move from primary dumpster to the dumpster or the recoverable items in the cloud. That happens automatically too, okay? If not, then there is a procedure to clean up your recoverable items, and that's documented on TechNet. So, number of options.
Do you get an event off somewhere?
You will get alerts, and that is also... I'm sorry?
30 gigs is not much.
30 gigs, you know, if you consider about 5 gigs on an average, again, you can raise it, okay? Yeah. In on-premises, primary, you can raise it to whatever you want. You can raise it to 50 gigs, 100 gigs if you'd like. But 30 gigs, I think, holds about a few years' worth of data for an average user. So good enough for most users, but your mileage is going to vary. So that's how this whole immutability works, how we preserve deleted items, how we manage versions without impacting the user experience, and still surfacing this in e-discovery. Okay, so if you had Exchange 2010 on-premises instead of Exchange 2013, then there is no time-based hold. So what we've suggested in the past is to use a rolling legal hold, where you can basically set single item recovery, and you can set the deleted item retention period to whatever you like. That kind of emulates time-based in-place hold. The caveat is it's going to calculate the time from when the item was deleted. So something to keep in mind.
Well, if you're on 2013, then you can actually set the duration of your legal hold. So.
Okay. Now, data governance, we've already talked about it, but quick overview. There is an archive policy which moves stuff to the archive. You can set a policy for the whole mailbox. And then you can create personal tags for users so that they can go and tag items. It's up to you if you want to do that, okay? Then there is delete policy. Delete policy deletes message. So you also want to make sure that after 2 years it's moved to archive, but after 7 years I also want to delete the message. So that's done using the delete policy. Now the delete policy, you can set a default policy for the whole mailbox, But you can also set retention policy tags for individual folders, like the inbox, deleted items. Maybe I don't want to keep deleted items for too long, 30 days, right? Junk mail, maybe even shorter period, 14 days. So you have that flexibility using the archive and deletion policy, also known as retention policies. Okay, so delete policy, archive policy. Now, the workflow, this is what it looks like to the user in Outlook and OWA. So they can just go and tag individual messages, so the whole mailbox policy does not apply to that message. They can also create folders and apply different tags to them if you allow them to, using personal tags. So you can say newsletter subscriptions. Maybe I want to just keep it for 3 days. You can create a tag called newsletters, 3 days, delete, or move to the archive, whatever you want to do with it. And users can apply that. So that is in 2013, Outlook Web App, single menu called Assign Policy. It'll show you both personal tags or archive policy and retention policy. Now, here's something new, and what customers asked us is, what does retention policy do? It makes sure that when you say 7 years, delete, that the message gets deleted at 7 years. What it does not do is prevent the user from deleting a message before the 7 years are out, right? So that's where the time-based in-place hold comes. They both work together. So you create a retention policy to delete in 7 years. You create an in-place hold to preserve for 7 years. So if the user deleted before 7 years, the hold is going to preserve it. And after 7 years, it'll actually really be deleted. And there is no workaround to that. Okay, migrating retention policy to the cloud. So once you set up this hybrid deployment, one of the things you need to do is take your on-premises retention policy, if you already have one, and make sure that the same retention tags and retention policies are copied or migrated to the cloud. So we've provided two scripts in the scripts folder in your on-premises. It's called export retention tags and import retention tags. It's basically going to create an XML file. You take that XML file, use PowerShell to connect to the cloud, and simply you run the import script to import the XML. And that's how the retention tags are getting synchronized. Now, once you do this, anytime you make changes to your retention policy on-premises, you're going to have to do this same thing again, and it'll refresh the tags in the cloud. Now, track changes. You can audit admin actions, whether they're taken on-premises or whether they're taken against your cloud-based archive mailboxes. So there is reporting built in. You can go take a look at that. Things like, you know, who ran what PowerShell command to maybe delete a mailbox or change a particular attribute, make configuration changes, all that gets audited, and you can run reports on it. Configuring auditing, I'm going to skip this slide. It's a PowerShell command on how to enable it, but this is enabled by default, so. Okay, finally, why are we doing all this is, of course, e-discovery. So in Exchange 2010, we had multi-mailbox search. In 2013, we have in-place e-discovery. And it is merged with in-place hold, so there's a single interface that you run to create a query and either, you know, place a hold on all those items based on the query, or once that search is created, goes and searches the mailbox across your on-premises and the cloud. And now what you can do after that search is created is copy the data to a discovery mailbox and let your in-house lawyers or, you know, HR people or whoever need to have access to that. You can also export now from this web-based UI. You can export that data to a PST using your on-premises EAC or PowerShell if you'd like. So what you're seeing on the screen, though, is SharePoint eDiscovery Center. And this is new in Exchange 2013 and SharePoint 2013. Now, if you have SharePoint and Exchange, you do OAuths, they're talking to each other. Now you can perform e-discovery of SharePoint data, which includes your websites in SharePoint, your lists, your documents, and your file shares. So you can perform e-discovery across all this, and also your Exchange mailboxes. Now, if the mailbox has a cloud-based archive, then we will search that as well. And all that data, now you can export it to an EDRM-compliant export format. So a lot of integration. And overall, what this allows you now to do is take care of the storage. You don't have to spend so much money on your expensive storage anymore. Get a seamless experience for your user. Get unlimited storage for that user. And get rid of PSTs. So all this data is now discoverable. So that is it. Let's do a quick look at what it looks like in SharePoint. Up here, I've added mailboxes from SharePoint Exchange. And I have added file share. And I've added a website. Or no, these are both file shares. So I can do discovery on all of this data and select mailboxes here. OK, so summarize now. Exchange Online Archiving gives you an easy way to manage your storage across on-premises and move all the old data to the cloud. All your compliance features will work seamlessly, including hold, including retention and archiving policies. E-discovery works seamlessly. It's all across a great story for the user and the admin. So still have some time for questions?
Yeah, definitely. And I just wanted to show you guys. It just worked, so came through. So Madrid, it's got an archive now. Okay. Live demo in front of you guys.
Hosted, so provisioned. Right back.
Awesome.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, so Outlook has group policies. You have a lot of settings that can not only prevent creation of additional PST files, so you can still allow them to use existing PST files if you like, but also there are settings that will prevent them, because they already have a PST, to move your mailbox data to that PST. So you're preventing further leaks of data from your org. Yes. Can you repeat that?
Office 365 Education.
Yes.
It does.
But I think you will have to have the faculty add-on for that. I think it is only for the faculty, but shoot me an email and I can confirm that for you.
Yep. And the plans in Office 365 that do not have archiving, you can buy the EOA add-on. Okay, that's an additional cost, but it's only $3 per month per user. For unlimited storage.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay. More questions? We're all happy about this. We all feel great. Good, good. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Please do leave feedback. We will appreciate it. And especially because it was a very cool, sexy OWA session next door. You chose to attend this, so thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the show.